This is the Dinner Party Download from APM. Subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Your first two projects, post-Hamilton, are the Moana soundtrack and appearing in the Mary Poppins sequel. Why, after doing, you know, a historical, political, musical, are your first two projects aimed at kids?
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought of it as being aimed as kids. It's interesting.
It is true. I mean, I know a lot of adults that saw Moana, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. That's not how I think of it. Well, one, the interesting thing with Moana is I actually started working on that about 7.5 months before Hamilton opened off-Broadway. And I can tell you it's 7.5 months before because I found out I got the job the same day I found out I was going to be a dad. And my son was born 3 weeks before we started rehearsals. It was one of those, hey, we're going to be parents. Hey, you got the job. Hey, here's a plane ticket to New Zealand. It was one of those, like, this is not how I thought Wednesday would go. So, yeah, so that's very surreal. And then, you know, the Mary Poppins sort of couldn't be more different a gig. It was always my dream to write songs for Disney one day. I never even thought about dreaming about a Mary Poppins sequel. But it was just, you know, Rob Marshall, I think, is the best at making movie musicals. I think he should have been directing Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire, and he stuck with me. But he's literally the best in the world at making them. So I was not going to pass up the opportunity to learn from him.
Sure. As you just said, you spent your whole life wanting to write for a Disney musical. You're probably aware, therefore, that many musicals, but especially Disney musicals, towards the beginning of them, there tends to be a song called an I Want song, which is literally the main character stating straight up their goals for the movie. How Far I'll Go is an I Want song. It's the main character wishing she could cross this reef, which her father has forbidden her to cross. The bar for an audience for those particular songs is so high. MTV actually ranked all the I Want songs when Moana came out, including yours. You ended up, I think, a respectable number 5 or something.
I'm amazed that it appeared, honestly. No, I mean, it's you have to force it out of your mind when you sit at the piano. You know, remember, I'm in the wake of Let It Go.
A minor hit.
So it was like, don't write Let It Go. Don't write Let It Go. That was what I was thinking when I sat down at the piano.
But how hard is it not to write? I mean, in a sense, all of them have a similar feel. They are these grand statements of belief. So how do you avoid, you know, falling into a, I'm going to just write another Let It Go?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think you the only solution to not thinking about that bar and being in that club of I Want songs is to just double down on what does your character want, what makes her unique, and what makes her very specific, you know. Part of Your World is my favorite I Want song.
From The Little Mermaid, right?
This is from The Little Mermaid, and it's because it's so specific. You know, that brilliant conceit of her not having the names for the human things. What's that word again? Feet. That's sort of the brilliant thing. I actually wrote a first draft of the song that eventually became How Far I'll Go, and it's on the deluxe edition of the CD. It's called More. And it was a good song. It was perfectly fine, and she was sort of like, all right, I'm hip to this island. I want to see what else is out there. And then I think the key insight that really made the song what it is it's not about not liking where she is and wanting to go somewhere else. She loves where she is. She loves her parents. She loves her island. She loves her community. And there's this voice anyway. And so I felt like that was much more complicated and also much truer to my experience growing up, which was I had loving, supportive parents. I lived in a neighborhood I really liked. I went to a school. I had friends. And yet there was this impossible distance between me wanting to make movies and write shows. I didn't know anyone in show business. I didn't know anyone in that world.
Your mom is a psychologist?
My mom's a psychologist. My dad was in politics. And, you know, it's no accident that I wrote what became the final draft of How Far I'll Go at my parents' house. I kind of went method for it. I like locked myself up in my bedroom and I was like, all right, you're 16 years old and the distance between you and what you want is impossible.
I can lead with pride. I can make us strong. I'll be satisfied if I play along. But the voice inside sings a different song. What is wrong with me? See the light as it shines on the
Actually, this leads nicely to my next question, which is, when you were growing up, what was your I Want song? something in pop music maybe that crystallized how you wanted to be?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Someone else asked me like a similar question to what you asked me at the beginning of like Hamilton to Disney, like how does that work? And I go, well, what is my shot but an enormous 6-minute I Want song? It is, and to me, my favorite rap songs are I Want songs in disguise. They are this is my world and I'm going to get out of here.
Like
Lose Yourself, like Can't Knock the Hustle, like Juicy, you know?
Like most of them, thinking
about. Most of them are, like, if they're really good, they're I Want songs.
It's like an entire genre of I Want songs.
Kind of is. But I'm trying to think in terms of my adolescence in particular. I was entering sort of prepubescence and pubescence at that golden era of Disney animated musicals. Like I was 10 when Little Mermaid came out and rocked my world. And
then, by the same director as Moana, by the way.
Yes. And then it was Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King. It was like 4 in a row of just like bruh, bruh, bruh. Brilliant. And in totally different ways. Like I was exactly the right age for those. So yeah, so I feel like Menken and Ashman in particular really raised the bar in terms of
the guys who
wrote all those songs. Howard Ashman sadly passed away during Beauty and the Beast, but his lyrics are both epic and conversational, right? They have those pauses that feel like the way people really talk. You know, I think of Belle going, wow, isn't this amazing? It's my favorite part because you'll see, like, interrupting her own train of thought within a lyric. You know, we are miles beyond When You Wish Upon a Star. And so I sort of am always chasing that when I write.
Let's talk about another influence on the music for this movie. The song Shiny.
Yes!
Is based on David Bowie,
yeah.
Which I understand you listened to a lot of while writing that song, a lot of David Bowie songs. What, when you were listening to all that stuff, what were his, did you figure out, like, what makes a David Bowie song a David Bowie song?
Well, one, the idea came to me because they told me Jemaine Clement was going to be the voice of Tomatoa. And as soon as
one of the Flight of the Conchords guys.
Yeah, exactly. And as soon as I heard it was Jemaine, I was like, oh, we're writing a David Bowie tribute. Because he did one of the best ones. Flight of the Conchords does this amazing David Bowie tribute song. And, you know, I, along with the rest of the world, was mourning Bowie in 2016. And so I was listening to a lot of Bowie anyway. So it had kind of seeped into my bloodstream a bit. But for me, it's all about, and also I think the other reason for it, and I haven't said this to anyone before, I think the uber villain of my childhood growing up was David Bowie, the Goblin King, from the movie Labyrinth, where he's so good and he's so charming. He kind of capsizes the movie. I grew up with an older sister, and my sister used to tell me, I would give you away to the Goblin King, and I wouldn't come looking for you. I would just go live with David Bowie and be happy.
Oh, no.
So I think his voice as a kind of villain was already floating in my subconscious.
Yeah, he's the character that sings the Bowie song is a bad guy. Here's a giant crab who likes shiny things.
Yeah, yeah. So, but to me, the trick to the Bowie tribute is really sinking into the vowels. It's the Maui man, you know, die, die, die. You know, it's about really just hitting the vowels so hard.
My shelf's too tough, Maui man. You can try, 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 but you can't expect a demigod to beat and take apart. Pick it up. You will die, die, die. Now it's time for me to take apart your aching heart. Far from the ones who abandoned you, chasing the love of these humans.
And also the way he says, love! You know, I've been listening to a lot of Under Pressure. Love, love, love. So when he's, you know, far from the humans who made you, you know, love. I just had to put that in the way he says love.
All right. I also wanted to ask you about songs that you don't write, at least in a traditional way. You improvise them. You are known as a great freestyle rapper, basically improvising rap songs as you go, which seems to me to be just like an almost superhuman skill. Is that a talent you're just born with? Is it something you can practice? What do you do to practice that?
No, in fact, I remember being in high school and having friends who were good at it in high school, and I was never the kid. I was always going like, I don't have anything, pass it, puzzle. And then I think I got courage in college. Like, I remember starting to freestyle as a goof with my friends and then realizing, like, the more we did it, I was getting better and my friends weren't getting any better.
But why? What were you doing, do you think, that made it? I mean, were you sitting around in your car just freestyling?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I very distinctly remember this one road trip my college roommates and I took. We drove to Vegas and back in a week, which I don't recommend to anyone. We had to get back because we were all in a play.
This is from New York, I'm assuming.
This is from Connecticut. Yeah, from Connecticut to Vegas and back. And I caught the Kansas 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. driving shift. We could only make it if we drove nonstop. And no disrespect to Kansas, but at night, it's flat and there's nothing to see. There's nothing to keep you awake. It's like gas station, farm, gas station, farm. And everyone else in the car was asleep. And I remember from 1 to 5 a.m. just popping in a tape of instrumental beats, drinking 4 Red Bulls, and rapping to myself. And when the sun came up that morning, I was pretty good at freestyling because I had gone through some wormhole.
What were the other guys doing while you were freestyling?
Knocked out asleep.
They missed it. They missed the genesis of a great, a great freestyle.
They did. It happened while they were sleeping. I don't know if it was any good, but I know I went from, I pushed through some 10,000 hours.
So that's the trip. So that's the secret, is just do it and do it and do it until you're good.
Yeah, the secret is to do it and do it, do it. And also do it with people who challenge you. I mean, the great thing I have is this improv group called Freestyle Love Supreme. And we've done this countless times in front of so many audiences that, like, you get a certain fearlessness because you've done it. And what's funny is your body doesn't know. I still get the same stomach ache and the same, like, hey, we haven't rehearsed. What are we going out there and doing? Like, you can't tell your reptilian brain that
this is safe.
That this is going to be okay. But, you know, thankfully, I've got friends who are really good at it. And so we keep each other's knives sharp.
I hope you don't mind. I have to ask you a few questions about Hamilton, if
yeah,
that's
sure.
All right. By its nature, a limited number of people on Earth can actually see the show. It's a live performance.
Right.
So most people that are really into it are into it through the music. What is it that you're sad people are missing when they are unable to see the show?
Well, here's the thing. That's how I fell in love with most Broadway shows. I've still never seen Man of La Mancha on stage.
Really?
I've still never seen Camelot on stage. But I fell in love with those. I wore those cast albums out when I was a kid. And so I have a version in my head that I'm almost scared to break by seeing the show's stage.
You're never going to see Man of La Mancha now.
It was on Broadway a few years ago, and I didn't go. I was just like, no, I've got the version in my head that I'd like to see. You know, there is a magic to that. At the same time, you know, the work of my collaborators is so incredible. I think, you know, Andy's choreography is just unreal. And that's also what's awesome about it. What's awesome is when you have fans who have listened to the album a million times, there's still so much more when they actually go see it. It's not like even though the show is sung through, you know what happens if you've listened to these two discs. There is so much in store for you when you see it live.
I will admit, I have not seen the show live. I have tickets to see it here in LA.
Oh,
is there something in the staging or something, some little detail that most people don't catch that you really love that I should be looking out for?
I'll tell you what I see something new every time I see it is in the song called Hurricane. There's a tableau that happens as he's singing, and this isn't a spoiler. He said to himself, hoping it's not a spoiler, but there's this incredible tableau that happens. The entire company shows up and this freeze happens, and every moment in the freeze is a different moment of Hamilton's life. So in one corner you see a red coat, in one corner you see, you know, King George, and it's like this, every time I see it, I see something I hadn't seen before. And that's like, I get to see it a lot, like, especially now that I'm not in the show. I couldn't see anything when I was actually Hamilton in the eye of the hurricane, but I catch something happening in the sidelines or between two of the ensemble members that I've never seen before every time I see it.
We have two questions that we ask everyone on the show.
Okay.
The first one, if we were to meet you at a party, what question should we not ask you?
Party for a selfie.
I'm probably going to ask you for a selfie after this interview,
yeah,
I'm afraid.
I don't mind. I'll always oblige. But yeah, I mean, all right. We could be talking about something.
That surprises me, actually, because I would think that it would be asking about the Mike Pence situation.
Oh, yeah. Well, that too, because it's also that was over from Friday to Sunday, and I still get asked about it all the time, which was like, we said our piece. He was not offended and was like on the news that Sunday being like, it was a great show. I want everyone to go see it.
And well, it's not so much his offense. I think people are somewhat interested in our president's offense that he took at that.
Yeah. And I think it was a mischaracterization of what happened. And that's what sort of caused a lot of the noise around the thing. But I was very grateful. Mike Pence sort of said like, no, I wasn't offended. That's part of the gig. And you know, I really like the show.
It actually, as we were just talking, it occurs to me that this show in particular, it was actually debuted at the Obama White House. Now it's become sort of maybe seen in a different light by a new group of politicians. It's always been kind of steeped in politics. Was that by design?
Design. My hope was that we'd get off the arts page. You know, that's my hope was that we'd mount a production. Everything else has been not by design. But it is interesting. You know, one of the themes of the show is you have no control who lives, who dies, who tells your story. Hamilton was succeeded by all of his enemies becoming president. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was Jefferson, it was Monroe, it was John Quincy Adams, it was Madison, not in that order. But those are all guys who, like, did not like Hamilton. And so, you know, we were beloved by the last president. We are not so beloved by this president, and life goes on. That is under no one's control.